It's September 20th, 2013, and we're now doing the second part of Yvonne Schoeffer's reminiscences. As you, if you recall, Yvonne is the humanities bibliographer, was the humanities bibliographer for about 30 years or more. More than 27 years, which I thought. She's now going to give us part two. Welcome again, Yvonne.
Thank you, David.
First, we'll talk about your professional activities. I don't believe we covered that in the last
one. No, but that's part of... that's another part that I was planning to discuss at greater length.
You're on.
Question of bibliographers' interaction with the departments that they were supporting by their selections for the library was not explicitly mandated when I started working. I seem to remember that at the time there were older members of some departments that were in the library all the time. Therefore, it was easy to identify them and introduce oneself, and they would frequently come and knock on the door, and they wanted to talk about not necessarily their research needs, which were probably adequately covered at the time. I remember Professor Quintana with his green Harvard
book. Swift guy, huh?
Yes, yeah. Yes, and he was in the library every morning, although at that time certainly well into his late 80s. And a lot of the older faculty were using the library quite extensively at the time, perhaps because they used their studies on the fifth floor, which later on became much less frequently populated, it seems to me. But we were not mandated by the library administration to establish formal contacts with the faculty, so it sort of depended on the personalities of selectors and faculty at the time. I think that started to change because as we were less and less able to cover all the needs as extensively as I would have considered desirable, we had to make an effort to reach out to the faculty that we never saw and find out if they felt that we were not meeting their research needs. And of course we realized that they never used the library at all, so that was a sad realization of perhaps a misunderstanding at the in the enterprise of collection development. And later on it became much more important, so I think I took it on myself to require a small amount of time at the beginning of the fall semester to talk to the faculty during their first meeting, and also to talk to the graduate students, and that sort of met with various degrees of success. I think it became easier in a way when the English faculty, I don't want to name any names, realized that they were being left behind by the electronic developments. And of course they, what was very clear at the time is that most of them did not know how to use the catalog, so that was a sobering...
Even the paper catalog.
That's right. And of course when it when we started acquiring databases, and they realized that they were perhaps going to have to retool in that direction. So then the department started asking selectors, at least that was my position, to come and talk to them about how to use the electronic resources. So talk about the blind leading the blind. But But it sort of happened at about the same time as we had those communication requirements.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, for undergrad units, and we were all required to teach those basic courses to entering freshmen, or perhaps later on also other years. But that seemed to start at about the same time. And then the faculty, some of whom I didn't know from other departments, because I served quite a few departments, turned in requests to have us talk about library research in some particular area. So that really seemed to pick up the pace at that point. And then, depending on who was chairing the departments, you
number available.
They'll leave a message if they want
to. Number available.
All right. Well, we'll try to talk over the
number available.
Oh.
Okay. Sorry.
So, what was I saying?
You were saying that you were teaching specific topics in these.
Yes, yeah. That's right. That really was very much an increase, and then at the same time, we were asked to do a lot more presentations, and I did a lot of that upstairs in Special Collections. So then faculty knew that we were we could help the students. So I did a lot of that with Joe Rosenshield for a long time. The other departments would have suddenly a need to bring their classes out to find out about theater research and other things that previously we had not known about. Of course, faculty tended to turn in requests, but they were not addressed to anyone in particular, and quite often they thought they should send them to acquisition, so some of them had no real understanding of how things were done. But it's probably the case that initially, before bibliographers came in, their function was folded into acquisitions. At least I don't know how it was here, but from what I've read, it was the situation at other institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you probably would remember that better than I.
Well, of course, we were lucky. We were operating independently. We were part of the reference, and we were part of acquisitions. So.
Yes, but the reference experience bypassed me completely, because by that time I heard that bibliographers had not been very good reference librarians, because they were not trained to accept any sort of question, and it's possible that some of our colleagues would say, well, that's a dumb question, why are you asking this?
That's a dumb question, reference department?
Yes. So the public interaction perhaps was but that was what I always heard, that bibliographers had been asked not to be at the reference desk.
Well, whatever the reason, I don't remember that exactly, but whatever the reason, we never were, and that was a good thing from my point of view.
Mm-hmm, yes.
For most of our
I started saying that as a result of all these other changes, it became easier to formalize our interaction with departments. In other words, depending on who was chair, you would work out a system by which you would meet with the chair every so often and report on what was happening, and the chair would in return explain what was happening in the department and what the needs were. And I also started a regular contact arrangement with graduate students. For instance, in the English department they had four areas of graduate study, and I asked the chair at the time, this was really quite late, to find a representative graduate student from each of those areas to come and to sort of report on what the needs were in that particular area, which was very important in areas like linguistics, for instance, because I covered linguistics, but the department of linguistics was very small, and they seemed to be writing all the books anyway, and it was more like a science, so I never quite knew how to handle it, because we were not covering a whole range of subjects in linguistics, and the requests I used to get were mostly from Korean students who wanted a book published in 1963, which of course we were not going to buy, and it was also a discipline in which the a book that was 2 or 3 years old was already obsolete for the in terms of research. But by trying to focus on the graduate students' activities, I think it became easier for me to identify what should be covered and what we had in the collection that was still useful, and particularly dealing with the very expensive journals that were quite the pricing structure for linguistics was very much closer to the scientific model, unlike a lot of journals in literature or even film. So, but these arrangements were not formalized, so that I don't know what happens now if Susan probably has some ways of communicating with the department. There was nothing that was had been organized in any sort of way, which was probably okay. So that should probably cover that part. But of course, we did a lot more bibliographic instruction in general after things became computerized in the library. So I got a lot of email requests saying, "Well, why don't we have this journal? It's so fundamental." And of course, we had it. It's just that the faculty member had not been able to find it. But of course, they were not too anxious to reveal their ignorance. So, and there were huge differences between their abilities to use the system. But in general, the contacts were quite informative. And unfortunately, that's about the time when collection development as a library function started taking a nosedive, from which I gather it has not really recovered.
Don't see how it could.
Couldn't. So that was a good time to get out. But it sort of seemed to coincide with the period during which the library became very focused towards administration and management, so that efficiency and management were parts of our responsibilities as well. And I never saw myself as a fund manager. It was difficult to do. It was not something that I relished. Do you remember we had to prepare those budget exercises for a few years?
Yeah.
It was dropped later on. But
mid-90s.
They were entirely fabricated, as far as I can tell, because we did not use the same sources, and my arithmetic was not up to the task. And of course, the approval plans came in, we had them before, but we were always in charge of developing the profiles. We did not have to have a profile as part of a general library arrangement. And that's why I had to fight to keep Robinson, because people in acquisitions and in, well, this was when we had a collection development officer that was, well, perhaps not entirely qualified. Should I say things like that or this interview?
Well, yeah, you can embargo this as long as you want, in any case.
Well, frankly, when Richard Reeb became a collection development officer, his main purpose was to just have everything go in the same direction. So if you had anything a little bit outside of that, he did his utmost to put an end to it, and which was really rather sad, because that arrangement was working extremely well. I kept it going for a long time because Pamela Robinson gave us a discount that was the same as Yankee, so I could justify staying with that approval plan, which saved me a lot of time, and she was good. She knew the collection, she knew what was needed, she knew what she had sent previously. But when we started getting things that already had their call numbers on the spine and could not be returned, and it was clear that the jobbers were taking advantage of the situation, that's when it felt as though we were being told not to interfere. And it was also the time when it was difficult for us to see what had come on the blanket order, because they had to leave the books on the shelf for 2 weeks. Well, that was not efficient enough. And there were other examples. For instance, the new bookshelf, we bibliographers could select things, and after a while that was given over to somebody, some other department. And to this day, the books that are on the new bookshelf are exceedingly dull. I don't think they make much of an effort to improve that. So the increase in the managerial style, I think, was very problematic for the library. And I also came to, it seemed to me that as soon as a librarian went over to administration, they stopped being librarians. And the administration seemed to take over from the fact that they were still librarians. So that's what I would say about that. And we were reorganized every 5 minutes, and every new structure was considered to be better than the previous one. You remember that?
Oh yeah.
So
they're still doing that.
They're still doing that. Well, of course they have to. But they, the people in charge, if they spend their life having meetings, I don't see how they could stay in touch with the librarianship. There's just no way. And then that also, it seems to me, has a strange effect of presenting the library as an entity in itself that's not connected to the university, which I think is a big mistake. I think the university is what we should keep in mind. Well, too late now. You know, it's very much après moi le déluge sort of feeling. But I don't know anyone in the library anymore, or hardly anyone.
I'd say about half the people I see, or many of them, are staff. I don't even know that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No. And they don't seem to stay very long. They seem to, the new people seem to get to move to another job after 2 or 3 years, which was not the case. It's the same thing in the departments, I think. People who started teaching here in the 60s expected to spend their career here. Oh well. Professional activities, maybe, now?
Yeah.
Well, I when I became a bibliographer, I joined ALA because it seems the thing to do, and it was not a bad idea because at the same time, a discussion group of English and American literature bibliographers sort of started forming itself in a exceedingly informal way, and I joined that. The Western European people had already done that, and much more efficiently than the English collection development people. And eventually that discussion group became a section of ACRL. So that was a good approach, because I went to the two conferences and met my counterparts at other institutions, and I always used to think, oh, I'm so lucky to be here at Wisconsin, where I can do pretty much what I want with my operation, whereas so many of my colleagues had impossible directors that wouldn't let them place certain orders and went over everything they selected. Isn't that what Mr. Kaplan used to do here?
Yeah, 50 years ago.
Yes, but 10 years ago, they were still the case in certain institutions, so I felt that we had a good setup here. And then, of course, all those people retired at about the same time, so now I don't know anyone in that group. I'm still on the listserv, but I don't know who they are, and they hardly ever talk about collection development. A lot of what I did had to do with the fact that there was no one representing Wisconsin at special collections, at the collection, special collections and rare books level, because when John Tedeschi came in, he was not at all interested in library related meetings, so I used to go to RBMS, the pre-conference before ALA, and both in the summer and mid-winter, where a lot of very interesting things were discussed, and I did a certain amount of committee work there. It was not always an easy position to be in, because I realized that almost no one among my counterparts had to deal with special collections. So this was something that was very specific to this institution. But on the other hand, they were not subject specialists in many cases. So because I was working with the Cairns collection and the little magazines, I was able to make some presentations. I spoke at ARL in Cincinnati about the Cairns collection, and I did various things with little magazines, and Marcia Pancake, who was my opposite number at Minnesota, and she was very involved in ALA, did joint presentations. This was at the time when Lou Pitchman wanted the two institutions to work together a little more. Nothing much came of that, but we had some good meetings. So, of course, when Robin came in, no more special collections meeting. But it was good while it lasted. And as for our cooperative efforts, I'm not sure that they came to anything. Although we did discuss things with our colleagues, so it was interesting to do just that. So, I might be ready to talk about retrospective view, unless you can think of something else that. Committee work in Memorial. When I started, Bill Patch said, "Why don't you chair the professional reading committee?"
Explain what that was.
Well, I did that, but of course it was not to be after a while. I spent 10 years on the Equity Action Committee, where we endlessly rewrote the guidelines, and we participated in search and screen committees. I don't know what's happening to that. It's still going, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a bunch of new names I never heard of now on the Equity Action Committee. I was chair of it for about 15 years.
Yes.
And expressive reading was material circulated among the staff in order to
professional reading
raise their level.
Yes. Yes. So there were there were quite a few. There were at least 15 or 20 titles that were distributed among members of the committee for circulation and retrieval.
So sometimes.
Joan Ross Allen was on that committee.
Did Jan tell you that there's a picture of Joan Ross Allen in the Parkinson's magazine in a wheelchair sitting like this?
No.
Yeah.
Well, she was so agitated during her active life. Poor woman.
Yeah.
Yes.
So go on with the committees then.
You
served on search and screen committees as not as equity action monitor, also as a as actual member of the committee.
Yes. I was the only bibliographer on the committee.
Yeah.
But I can't remember that we ever did anything very significant except rewrite the guidelines.
Well, you know, it's for show as much as anything else.
Yeah, but it was useful to participate in those search and screen committees, I think. I can't remember much else about it. I co-chaired the exhibits committee with Jill forever. of course, we had very little time to do exhibits, so they were usually done the day before, but we had some good ones. Assuming we had a place to display our exhibits, because those were not in special collections, so those were in the library proper, and when we got the new building, I think we had some old wall cases on the second floor, where reference now exhibits, but we had very little exhibit space other than that until we got the space in the entrance lobby. That was before the public computers were installed, but there were all sorts of strictures about not having the cases directly across the official front door, which of course is not used, the sort of front. Because of fire regulations. So we constantly had to move them around. And Jill and I, we had no budget for that, very little money so we went to Milwaukee and we bought some old jeweler's cases that were going for a haul. So we had exhibits on those for a number of years. And then we were able to get more other cases that were discarded from other places in the library, I can hardly remember. And sometimes in the early 90s, I wrote a proposal to bring a traveling exhibit from the on Frankenstein from the National Medical Library in Washington, and we were chosen as one of the recipient libraries. So we had to. First of all, it was nice because some money came with it, and we were able to display. These were just big panels with things attached to them that were up in special collections. They had to be very well protected. And I had seen the original exhibit in Washington, and that gave me ideas to display other materials. And so Jill and I had a very good time with that, and there were all sorts of related activities at the medical library. And English got into the Department of English got into the act and paid for someone to give a talk about Frankenstein, a well-known scholar. And ComArts presented the film event. So it was good. What else did I do? You know, it's hard for me even to remember that. I worked on the journal duplication project with you and other people. Who were there? John Nye was on it, and John Dillon, perhaps?
Maybe.
But we had a list
that
high of titles, so it took a long time.
You know, we have spent most of the last 3 years deduplicating everything that every journal on campus,
yes.
almost every journal on campus,
yes.
because of shelving space.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Stuff's available online now.
There were just an incredible number of duplicates. So there were other short-lived projects that I can hardly remember. Of course, I was part of the My Librarian project that was a whim of the director, which was turned off after about 1 year. But at the time, was chaired by Abigail Loomis, who took it very seriously, and we had two monthly meetings of 2 hours each to talk about my librarian project, because suddenly the administration had a brainwave and said, we must send the selectors to the departments to explain what the library can do for them, as though it had not happened before. And of course, in a lot of departments, the faculty didn't even want to meet with us. It was a complete waste of time.
Let alone take food, valuable class time.
Yes. So it was a short-lived project in the sense that if we had proceeded to do that, it would have taken us about 10 years. Steve Fry was my partner in that effort. We went to journalism. We did a little presentation there. We went to ComArts, a nice department, really nice people. But again, we had very little luck in making appointments to see people. It was so inconvenient. And I think after that, the director lost interest, so it was turned off. There must have been a lot of similar initiatives.
Yeah, certainly over the years there's been a lot of things that have happened, like TQM and
I remember
guys
that.
Are boring almost.
Yes, where all the heads of department were sent to very expensive training courses. And occasionally the library administration would also bring a consulting team, remember that? We had those people who came and told us how to keep our desks neat.
No,
you never participated.
No, I feel left out now.
Oh, you were very fortunate that you could do that, but...
They didn't teach John Dillon how to keep his desk clean.
He probably didn't participate either. Well, but he must have emptied his office by now.
Yeah.
Well, the I would say also that cooperation was not just at the level of us and other institutions, but perhaps as an effect of the multi-reorganization of the libraries, I think the selectors perceived a need to work together much more closely. That was not the case when I started working, because the system was so divisive. I remember attending the first bibliographer meetings with Joe Trace, and it was an absolutely terrifying experience. You and Alex shaking fists over the budget.
Charles Bazzavo and
yes.
Alex Rolitz.
Yes. But, and people were very territorial also. I remember Irwin getting very upset I bought out of my field. He didn't like it, but there was not much sense of
collegiality?
Well, it was more that there was no recognition of the interdisciplinary aspects of that were, of course, getting much more into view at the time. But when selectors started realizing that in order to seek additional funding, it might be good to get it together to buy interdisciplinary resources, and that was very true of large microfilms, for instance. So first we had a cluster, so that started it a little bit but it was not terribly interdisciplinary, because it was humanities and social science as well. That of course made a certain sense. I think that's probably when began to be perceived as a useful thing to do. And then we had Ashin was just a residual group from the clusters, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I think that worked very well. We were able to get
a bit of money
out of that, yes. And I have to say, Michael, what's his name? Yes, he was a good person for that, because he was impartial, since these were not disciplines he was terribly interested in. And I gather that the science librarians, who were awash in funds, started getting very jealous of Ashin and demanded one of their own, but I don't think that happened. And apart from that, I started buying a lot of things together with Phyllis and Vicky and Lynn Korenik. So that was very helpful, I think. And of course, I was honored to be chosen as a recipient of the Library of the Year award shortly before making my exit. So when I retired in 2007, I really was ready for it. And by now, it's difficult to remember what I did. I have to try and... I have not kept any files except some that would not have been of any interest to Susan Baribou, and I have to say she's kept the office exactly in the same condition as it was. So
can't improve on perfection, huh?
Well, she's added some extra layers of materials, but it's a pleasant office. It's not like some that are good name next door. I try to remember mostly the pleasant parts, although there were some difficult parts, especially when we were really sidelined. And that sort of threw into some question the importance of our work. I started feeling that it hardly made any difference, because it wasn't the vision of the Cathedral of Intellect that I had envisioned when I took up the position.
Like anything else, the closer you look at it, the worse it looks.
So,
but we've held our own, I think.
Yes.
As a group.
Yes, but I mean, look now, when people retire, they're not even replaced. John Dillon's job has been parceled out.
Yeah.
And quite often, I don't think the people who take that a bit or two parts of it know what they are doing, but that's probably the fault of the university as much as anything else.
It's true, and of course Marilyn wasn't replaced, and I wasn't replaced.
You were not replaced at all?
No, well, I'm with them now.
Yeah. And, well, French has disappeared. Paloma is in charge, and as far as I know, she doesn't know French. So,
yeah, it's
just not the same sort of thing. Nobody probably takes time to find the sort of rarish things that we had to have in the collection.
I don't know how this compares with other libraries, and what they've evolved from or to over the past same period, the last 15, 20 years. I think we've, as I say, held our own in terms of having a small cadre of people who look at things besides the cost and circulation statistics.
Yes.
Such as they are.
Yes, yes. Well, I have to say that we were very lucky with Pitchman for such a long time, because he stood up for us. And of course, after that, it wasn't the same at all. He did have bizarre ideas sometimes, the conspectus being one of them. But he probably felt we needed to do it, since everyone else was.
But we didn't, did we?
Well, we never finished it, as far as I can remember.
I don't believe I ever started.
Well, we had those. We evaluated part of the collection completely random sort of way.
Right, you can do anything you want and not be subject to any disproof.
But some institutions gave themselves top marks for everything. So it's a different place, but it still is a marvelous collection. I don't know how the users view the collection. It's sad to think that a lot of it will disappear in a big box warehouse or in Verona based on circulation numbers.
Mostly going to be serials out there, I think.
Well, they were already moved up, though, to Middleton.
They keep being disgorged from these libraries.
But you see, again, that is a process that every other institution has already accomplished, which is kind of sad, especially in certainly in literature collections, because there's so much that is not online and will never be. And however, I read recently the announcement of a panel at MLA in 2014, that was sent by one of my former counterparts. This panel considers the role of the literature subject specialist in an era which appears to promote the use of Google style one box fits all searches.
What's that word before style?
So that will be one box fits all searches. So that will be at MLA next year. Of course, I don't go to MLA. I never did go to MLA because it was another expensive convention. So I hope it's well attended, but I'm glad I won't be there.
Maybe by next year there won't be anybody to talk about.